We're live.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the One Seat Buffer podcast, Ant-Man and the Wasp edition. We've all got our bug spray on. This is Tony Cone.
Joel Krausar.
Steve Truitt.
Corey Daufeldt.
Whoa, first timer.
First time, long time.
Corey Daufeldt in the house. Got the souvenir cup, which looks really great, by the way. We just got done watching Ant-Man and the Wasp, and I don't think I've laughed as hard in any Marvel movie. If I start there, I'm already, as I walked into the theater, I was excited because I think we all like Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
And Michael Douglas and Evangeline Lilly and Michael Pena. But
And Michelle Pfeiffer.
Right.
Well, yeah, it's like Catwoman comes into the Marvel Universe.
That was, I mean, it was great. It was more fun than the first Ant-Man, and they just had even more gimmicks. And the whole gimmick of Ant-Man is the ability to shrink himself, and the Wasp can shrink herself, and then the shrinking of the vehicles, everything was shrunk, except for the laughter by the audience.
Absolutely, and oversized objects were quite humorous.
Impressive.
As well.
Yeah.
It was so fun from the start to the finish. Like, it was great. I mean, there's an awesome opening sequence, and I really think that, you know, with the first Ant-Man, people were like, they didn't know what to think because the original director got fired. And I can't think of his name, but the first Ant-Man director that they had hired, they fired. So the project always seemed to be in limbo. It came out. I really enjoyed it. It did well. It didn't do, like, a billion-dollar Marvel movie well, but enough to where they brought him back. And I think that Ant-Man character just brings that brevity to all these movies that can be so heavy-handed sometimes.
I think what I love about Ant-Man, as the guy who didn't grow up paying a lot of attention to comic books and really following, you know, the whole Avengers and Marvel world, is that Ant-Man's like this really just fun, I get to go watch and just watch an awesome movie character. It's almost like, I kind of joked about it, like when I was a kid when The Shadow came out, I didn't know anything about that comic book or that radio show, but I loved that Alec Baldwin movie. I kind of feel like, even though that was like super dark and serious and almost Bruce Lee like, but this movie is like super fun. And like, I'm gonna be honest, I don't really remember the opening sequence that we were talking about, because I just remember laughing and having fun throughout this whole movie. It's like a legit comedy, almost like in the vein of like a Anchorman or a 40-Year-Old Virgin, that's woven around this cool little action movie.
Yeah, and as a comic book fan, just seeing the secondary characters like Ant-Man come on the screen, from reading them when I was a little kid, I would never imagine being able to see them in a movie of their own, just because comic books in my day were looked down upon as childish and you didn't really get a lot of girls back in the day if you were a comic book reader. So
and now they're like the coolest thing
ever.
Yeah,
now it's awesome. I enjoy being a comic book nerd now because I have knowledge that most don't. So it's kind of fun to sit back and be like, oh, well, I can tell you about this
it's
now.
Like,
I
should have
just read comic books because that girl still wanted nothing to do with me.
It's like vinyl. Vinyl is more popular.
Yeah, absolutely.
People are going back out and buying records that they had 40 years ago. Same thing with comic books.
Yeah, I love it.
Find them, and they're paying
ridiculous prices
wazoo.
Now, which is also bad for a comic book collector, because right. now everybody thinks they have gold, so when I go to buy something, the price is usually 10 times what it should be most of the time.
It is interesting, though, that Ant-Man is a mainstream character, and that we're sitting here talking about the second movie that they made about Ant-Man in the age of the Iron Man and the Captain Americas and the Batman. And I know we're crossing, you know, different studios there, but Ant-Man, like, you and I've certainly, you know, flipped through some of the comics, and
sure.
I thought they always did Ant-Man justice, but you never thought, like, who'd have thought that there'd be like $150 million Ant-Man and the Wasp movie?
Well, even in the comics, he wasn't really popular as a standalone character. He was always in Avenger books, or he was always paired with somebody or a storyline to make his character relevant. So to be able to see him in a standalone movie is quite impressive.
So Edgar Wright was the director that got fired from the first Ant-Man.
I think it's something Reed now.
Peyton Reed. And here's why Ant-Man and the Wasp is so funny, because Peyton Reed He is the guy that was behind Down With Love, Yes Man, Bring It On, and The Breakup. And I love The Breakup. That movie was funny, serious, sad.
Your fantasy football team name.
That's right. Breakup. Tone Rangers. So Peyton Reed comes in, and that's where Marvel has a lot of their success is attributed to the fact that they hire directors who you often wouldn't think to do superhero movies. And this is a guy that's just, I mean, you look at Peyton Reed's, you know, whatever, IMDb page, and the guy just knows how to make movies that are entertaining. So he did the first Ant-Man. He took over when Edgar Wright exited the project, and here he is with Ant-Man and the Wasp, and he just gets it. He absolutely gets it. Corey, any background with Ant-Man outside of the first film?
Not a lot, no.
Yeah. But Paul Rudd, again, is a stud.
And that's my question. Do we all love Ant-Man, or is Ant-Man a success because they cast a mega comedy star in Paul Rudd, who, let's be honest, he was tracking to be this serious, dramatic actor. You know, you look at, like, I can't remember the name of the movie they did with Reese Witherspoon, where they're like driving, they're on this road trip type thing, which is like a serious role. And he's even kind of like the serious, like, lovable guy in Clueless. Like, he's the one who brings that movie back to back to ground a little bit. And he was tracking that, and all of a sudden he's just like, you know what? I'm just going to have fun with my buddies and just start making really, really funny movies and slip the bass around. Then you throw a verse where it's like, okay, now you've got all these serious, like, Chris Evans seems so serious as Captain America.
Yes.
And, you know, yes, Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man is, he has that, like, serious, though, you know, gravitas as a legit actor. And Paul Rudd has that same thing, but he's just the total snarky,
I do enjoy the addition that Paul Rudd makes to the spectrum of the Marvel movies, because, like you said, everyone has that hero personality and that ultra serious personality, but yeah, it's kind of fun to sit back and laugh and just enjoy the movie instead of being on the edge of your seat thrill ride the whole time.
And that opening scene, now I remember it now, where they're doing the with the aunt, and he's playing with his daughter. Like, he's so good at being a normal dude. Like, I mean, you can envision that happening in any home, you know, in America. You know, a dad just having some fun and building a makeshift cardboard slide with their child.
It was like a luge. It went down like three stories. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, that was sweet. That was a really cool sequence. It's like that was attention to detail. And then, of course, Michael Pena is right there.
Yeah,
with him right by his side. And Pena, again, like, doesn't steal the movie, but
he's close.
He's very good. I don't know why Michael Pena, like, I don't, maybe he's content without stepping into the starring role, but the man can act. And he can act in a variety of ways, and he is so great in Ant-Man and the Wasp.
And maybe we can talk about him a little bit later if we talk about, you know, the hey, that guy movie, like a cast member of the movie. I know we've talked about that on past podcasts where there's always that person who kind of pops up on screen. I think Michael Pena might be a front runner for that kind of.
He's so good.
What is he? I mean, I think I texted you the other night. I rewatched Chips the other night.
Yeah.
Which should not have been as good as it was, but Michael Pena really kind of steals that movie away from Dax Shepard.
This movie has such a good cast, though. So Paul Rudd is Scott Lang or Ant-Man, right? Evangeline Lilly kicks some butt as Hope Van Dyne
RBF
slash the Wasp.
Big time, though. She just looks grumpy all the time.
Well, her mom's been gone for 30 years. So, and then her boyfriend
She definitely has reason to be grumpy.
How can you not bring your friend, aka the Wasp, to Germany to help fight when Civil War is going down.
Yeah.
Like, how can you not be like, hey, you got a super cool suit too, and it flies and it has blasters, come along, boo-boo. So yeah, Hope Van Dyne is super mad, and so is Hank Pym, Michael Douglas. Jeez, you know, they do something else in the beginning of this movie that Marvel's kind of played around with, which is like the reverse
CGI.
Digital aging.
You
notice that?
Yes.
Just like in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
It was like watching wolf come out of there from Wall Street.
Pretty crazy, right?
Yeah, he was the young Michael Douglas. Right, I forgot. Yeah,
isn't that crazy? Wild?
Well, they do it with Lawrence Fishburne too later on.
Yeah,
it's weird. Like the first time,
not that far back.
The first time they showed this, it was like kind of a joke in was it Civil War when they're doing that sequence when Downey Jr. was younger.
Oh yeah, when they had the young Robert Downey.
And then they did it to what's his name? I'm Kurt Russell in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. And I thought that they've kind of got it down.
It was like overboard, Kurt Russell.
Right.
Yeah. Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell.
It's like when you try and cover up a mustache on Superman. But this one, Michael Douglas looks young.
Is today the anniversary of Big Trouble in Chinatown?
Big Trouble in Little China. Oh, it's one of my favorite movies. Best John Carpenter.
They've been so good at layering things like that. It's such a small thing, but boy, you're like, Michael Douglas.
Yeah, and it really didn't look like, oh, that's fake.
Yeah, well, and they don't stay on it long enough where you're like, you can nitpick the whole time. I cannot talk today, boys.
It's so good to see. And again, I think that this is a movie that like people are gonna go, and some of the serious. But Steve, you're sitting here as like I would call you like the serious comic book aficionado fan. There's some people that are coming into this and they're saying, "Well, this is just. Did we really need this movie? What piece of the puzzle is it in the grand scheme of things?"
All I can say is stick around for the
mid credit scene, and after credit scene.
Yeah, because it definitely ties in with what's going on and what's going to happen going into Phase 4 for the Marvel.
So we will have some spoilers through this, but we're not going to spoil those after credits.
No. I
think we can walk up to the line. I mean, obviously, if you saw Infinity War, you kind of get a sense of where this movie is in that timeline. So
if you haven't seen Infinity War yet, turn it. I'm kidding. Yeah. If you haven't seen Infinity War.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, go.
Ant-Man and the Wasp is taking place at the same time as Infinity War is, right?
And I think they
in San Francico.
Well, and they actually brought it up. Infinity War
Brought it up in Infinity War about why Ant-Man wasn't around. So.
Yeah, he just was getting done with 2 years on house arrest in San Francisco across the country from where everything bad just seems to happen on the East Coast Marvel movies. So they go to San Fran. What was so cool, though, again, is the fact that they have this whole other line going.
Yeah.
And it's easy for you to sit there and think, like, isn't he going to get a call on the secret phone he had hidden in the wall that he uses to call Michael Douglas? Hank Pym, is that the same phone that they can go, hey, Scott, listen, this purple dude just showed up and he's real mad.
Yeah.
Can you get here?
The pager? Like,
right.
Should he have a pager?
Do you have some type of pager?
Well, yeah, like the Captain Marvel pager at the...
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
everybody needs a pager
that flashes their superhero emblem when there's trouble.
I think that this movie plays such an important role. So we know what happens after the snap in Infinity War. Some of it's go to dust, but unfortunately we also know that like there's a sequel to Spider-Man coming out and Black Panther and a Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 that James Gunn keeps taking pictures of.
So you're telling me that
Reality Stone
that they're not all they're dead. Not.
And here's what's going to happen. We just found out the quantum realm.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, the Scott Lang and Pym family are able to kind of cross into that quantum realm that they alluded to in the first.
And I'm sure that's going to have something to do with going into Infinity War Part 2, because there's not many ways without something like that you'd be able to reverse.
Right.
The effects of what happened.
Well, and Doctor Strange operates in the quantum realm a little bit too, doesn't
he?
Yes,
with the time stone.
But he only
had one out of a 14 million futures. Only one of them they won.
Yeah.
So what happens? We don't know.
Don't know yet.
We know for sure that this movie is an important part of that. And don't think for a second, like, if you're going to go in there skeptical, like, well, is this just a stopgap? Marvel knows what they're doing, ladies and gentlemen. Trust them.
They definitely have a formula down for what's going on.
Right. Well, yeah, there's a big – it's probably not actually written down chalkboard in an office. It's just coded. It's just like when we would write write fake codes on the newsroom just in case a rival publication was looking in the window, like we suspected that they did at some point. It's not. There's no codes there in the.
I would love to see the pegboard for that from 2006 all the way up to now. The lines and how they all connect.
Right. Probably like we have this little bit of money right now. What are we going
to
do?
Some interns trying to figure it out so they can extort them for a job.
Well, what's interesting is, again, the set photos that have leaked from Avengers 4.
Yes.
We've seen photos, and people have gone online and said they're fake. But, Corey, these photos are in New York, and it looks like they're recreating the big New York battle from Avengers, and it's Captain America in his old suit. But then there's Scott Lang, a.k.a. Ant-Man, in what appears to be the Ant-Man suit with perhaps button on his hand that they can use to maybe hop around through,
maybe go through that
different quantum realms, the quantum reality stone fueled. So I don't know. So how are we going to get to that point? And how is Infinity 4, whatever it's going to be called, Avengers 4, how is that not going to be 6 hours long?
Yeah,
because they're going to have to get
it's
so
Ken
much
Burns going to have to direct. I mean, it's almost
put it on PBS.
Yeah,
right. Because that, how long was Infinity War? Almost 3 hours.
2.5, 2:45. Yeah.
It's not like DC where they're just going to give you the sloth of a Batman Superman that's 3 hours long.
No, I think you're going to get quite
maybe
the explanation.
Maybe part one, part two.
Oh my god!
Is it just go to two movies? Yeah,
well, originally,
is it Lord of the Rings?
Well, originally, that's what it was supposed to be. Is it was supposed to be split up? It was supposed to be like a 6 hour movie split up into two parts.
And it kind of is, but it isn't. So they're going to announce the title later this year, and Kevin Feige. Is that how you say his last name?
Yeah.
The Marvel boss has even said they've gone too long and they've made too much of a deal about the title of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's the thing. So it goes Infinity War, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Captain Marvel, Brie Larson, and then Avengers 4, whatever it's called.
Which I think is going to be fantastic. That's one that I'm looking forward to is Captain Marvel. And
what?
I think that's going to have a big tie-in to everything, too. I think Captain Marvel is going to play a big role in the future of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like I said, I think the secondary characters are going to be pushed through to Phase 4, and they're really going to shine. And I think that we're going to see a lot of the ones that people have gotten used to over the last 10 years are going to go away, and I think they're going to slowly edge them out and start showcasing the secondary ones.
Well, I think if you're listening to this too and you're thinking, oh my gosh, is this just like a sequel to Avengers? It's not. Obviously, we're saying that they operate simultaneously, but kind of getting back to Ant-Man, like, I didn't feel like the whole time I'm watching this, I didn't feel like, okay, this is all setting this stuff up. They do a really nice job of making it a standalone flick.
Absolutely.
Without making you feel like, okay, I see what they're doing here. They're just stacking the deck so that these movies have success. This one that was really had a good flow to it, which I think 100%. Is hard to do when you're dealing in high concept science fiction like the quantum realm, you know, because you think about movies like the Phillies, like science fiction, do all these realm jumping.
Yeah.
They lose me super quick because I just don't have time for it. I don't like it. It's not my thing. They do a good job of not making you get too science fiction down. I will say this. I felt too much inner space, like Martin Short. Some of the vehicles reminded me way too much of that classic from the 90s. It started to lose me a little bit, and then it kind of went back to San Francisco. It's like, okay, I can believe this again.
Yeah, I think the movie does that well. It gives you the science background so that you do have an explanation for what's going on, but then it also knows when to break in and not be so serious so that you're not like you said, like oversaturated with science fiction and science and the story behind that. So they do throw in the humor, which is fun with Paul Rudd. And like you said, Michael Pena really adds a nice...
Brevity is so... It's so great. And
they go back and forth quite a bit to where they always want to... If they start to lose you, they pull you right back in so that they can keep you going through the story.
This movie is a palate cleanser, folks. Period.
Oh, from the last one? Yeah.
Palate cleanser. They understand that people left Infinity War crying.
It was like watching Dark Knight Rises.
That's right. And they knew... They knew.
It was like, this is so depressing.
They certainly
when's it going to be happy?
With Gary Oldman coming out to make us all sad.
Captain America's not even smiling.
See, that's you know that Marvel is that smart that they understood that the ending of Infinity War, and what a cold kick in the teeth ending it was.
Oh, my God.
Kick in the teeth. That was a cold, here it is, it's the end. Ain't no Marvel
movie so brutal.
Ever ended
it was
like that.
Brutal.
Somber. So they understand that the next film that has to come out, Ant-Man and the Wasp, not to make it intentionally funny, but boy, does it need to kind of have that glimmer of hope and fun and action and incredible sequences. But then, yes, it has to progress that story that we're all kind of waiting. I mean, people are chomping at the bit.
Well, especially if you took your children to see the last one, and now all their favorite superheroes are gone, and they're just destroyed now, and they're crushed. And now, at least this one, this is a definite family movie that Marvel's made where I'd bring my kids, and I think they get a real kick out of them.
Swear word. I think the entire movie.
Yeah, it's so light,
and there's really no adult humor really that
there's
I could
one kiss in the whole thing.
No, it's not crude at all. And
crude humor or like those jokes that adults are going to chuckle at. It's just
not a lot of innuendo, which is good. Look at my big words.
Innuendo.
Did you go
Here's
to college?
The other thing that Marvel does so well and that Peyton Reed does so well with someone like Michael Pena as Luis. When they go through all these sequences, they're like, we're going to catch you up really quick. We're going to give Michael Pena's character some truth serum, and he's going to explain kind of – because I was kind of waiting. I'm like, man, they got to fill in some blanks. Like, how did he just kind of up and leave the Wasp? And so I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah,
that's a
absolutely.
Great director and a great team of writers. You want to talk about people that are behind the scenes – the one seat buffer behind the scenes, and
that writer's room was
understand that
was sick,
and the editing too, right?
It's kind of nice. They know that the audience wants something like that, rather than to have to over explain. They like you said, they put that Michael Pena little blurb in there for like 2 minutes, and you were completely caught up of what happened instead of having to take an extra half hour of the movie and show every scene of what was going on.
And that's always kind of been my criticism of the big Avenger movies, and even we talk about the DC movies a little bit. There's this exposition of, hey, this is what happened, and we're gonna tell it in long form versus short form. And this movie and Spider-Man Homecoming did a really nice job of doing some of that short form hole filling.
Yeah, with
the
beginning there when they threw back to the first.
They kind of fudged the timeline.
Yeah, a little bit. But you kind of got the idea, like, okay, this is the first this big battle in New York. This is why he did this. And they kind of, like you said, short form. And it's much better that way than having to sit through a long, drawn-out explanation.
Well, and to come out this weekend, which obviously yesterday we're recording this on July 5th. Mm-hmm. July was yesterday.
Right.
Historically, one of the biggest movie weekends, weeks of the year.
Yeah.
This is what Marvel decided they wanted to have be the movie that came out. They wanted a fun family movie that still stood up to what this weekend is supposed to be, and that says a lot for a sequel of a comic book starring Paul Rudd.
I would even go as far as throwing a one seat buff flag, because I think it might sound crazy, but I think with how the ratings have changed, almost more PG than PG-13.
Oh, yeah.
Agreed.
Because in PG movies now, you can get away with a lot more.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Because maybe 15 or 20 years ago, this would be rated R. Think about some of the R-rated movies that were back in the late 80s, early 90s, and you're like, that was rated R? Why?
Yeah, no doubt.
And the MPAA definitely, they have their hands in the movie business. But as far as Ant-Man and the Wasp being, now I'm not saying I'm going to take my 6-year-old, but boy, when he's 11
I'll bring
and
my
a
7-year-old.
Yeah.
I think
because
Liam
even
would
if you
enjoy
don't know
it,
the
yeah.
source material, and the majority of us have seen, Corey, you've probably seen all these movies, but even if you haven't, they bring you right into the loop.
Oh, yeah.
You can't feel bad.
I mean, this was a great movie, I thought.
They're going to just do the favor, and that's what we've been talking about. They're going to do you the favor of saying, if you're here, if you're the wife or girlfriend that agreed to go see it because you think Paul Rudd's cute.
Well, absolutely. I think Paul Rudd's cute.
And I would, knocked
up. Paul Rudd might be one of my top five favorite actors.
He's great.
Actors.
And he, you know what, but that's what I'm saying. Like, you could be that date. This could be the date movie that you're coming to, and you don't know what the hell's going on. You have no clue. There's a guy riding an ant. But it's so funny. I mean, there are moments when we were all laughing so hard, we're missing dialogue.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
This is a rewatchable movie.
And I think that absolutely. They wrote it, though, like, because I kind of tried to stop laughing a little bit just to catch in.
Yeah.
They knew what they wrote, and the stuff that people were laughing after big laugh lines, it wasn't that consequential to what was going.
True.
And to go back to your thing about it being a good date movie, I think that Marvel does a good job about that, too, where you don't really need a huge background in comics to be able to just go into a movie and sit down and watch it and know what's going on. Like this one, I think just the normal average moviegoer that doesn't read comic books or might not even know who Ant-Man is, they might not even seen the first one. I don't even think you need to really see the first one.
No, that's the best part about
jump
it.
Into the second one
that's
and know
really
what's going
the best
on.
Part. And remember in the early trailers, they were even flashing scenes of Civil War when he went to Gigantic or whatever the hell that's called.
Right.
When he
goes Giant Man.
Giant Man or whatever with the airplane sequence that was so cool at the airport hangar. So they were almost like, hey, don't forget when this happened. And for us, for me at least, I was like, Marvel, I'm not dumb. That was just a couple years ago. Everybody saw these movies. They didn't see these movies. Some people avoid these movies, but here's what I'm going to tell you. You want to talk about a summer, perfect summer, fun movie. Mm-hmm. This is it. I liked this, and it's not even worth comparing, and it's totally different, but I like this a million times more than Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. This, they got right. And I'm not saying Marvel's perfect, but they get a lot of stuff right.
Yeah.
They get a lot of stuff right. And when they, you know, they know these characters so well, they bring in the good writers, they bring in these directors, and they say, we trust you. And not a lot of people are doing that. I mean, imagine if you're filming a DC movie, Aquaman, James Wan. He does The Conjuring, Conjuring 2, a Fast and the Furious movie. You would hope that you could trust that guy. But who's to say he's not getting micromanaged?
Sure.
Right?
Sure. And I think Marvel does a good job of letting... When they do their movies, and I think DC is finally starting to get the idea of it from what I can see. But I think with Kevin Feige being a part of Marvel as long as he has, the studios, and it helps to have your own studio since it's Marvel Studios, but they know the formula is if you're going to make a comic book movie, you have guys involved with the process of making the movie. And I think that DC is finally getting on board with that with getting Geoff Johns involved more with the overseeing.
Yes.
He is the chairman of DC Comics, and he's a writer himself and has put books out for years. So it's always good to have someone that has the knowledge of the characters and their background when they go in to make a movie, because then it makes more sense that way. I think when you're watching the movie as a not just as a comic book reader, but as a fan, because they're going to make it kind of flow better, I think, than just someone that that jumps on board and says, I'm going to make a superhero movie because they just gave me $50 million to make it. So.
It feels like these people, they come into, like, this movie felt like it came, and the first one as well. I really enjoyed the first Ant-Man.
It was great.
Yeah.
There's an enthusiasm that's there in the script. It's in how they've shot the film. It's how they've, you know, they use CGI. And one of the other things that's also really appealing about Ant-Man is that he's not a superhero, and the fact that he doesn't have some sort of abnormal heart. He doesn't have superpowers. Powers.
No,
he's not been created in a lab.
Yeah, his powers
it's
all
a
been
suit.
Given to
yeah,
him.
It's
yeah.
a suit. It's kind of like Batman. I mean,
yeah,
there's
Iron Man. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Iron Man's got the whole. He's got the whole magnetic
arc reactor.
Yeah,
yeah,
the arc reactor. But you know, it's kind of this everyman superhero. It's like, hey, dude, if I fell into this sweet suit, I could do this.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, it's like kind of the poor man's Batman, but Hank Pym's rich.
But the enthusiasm part is you have someone who's probably a fan of the comic book or the character, and they come and be like, hey, I always thought it would be cool when I was a kid if the thing could do this. What if we did this?
Yeah.
And maybe it's not possible, but then you got to back it down a little bit, and you collaborate, and there's that collaboration, and you flesh out the story, as opposed to somebody who's like, well, I read this graphic novel about this character, and maybe we should just retell chapter 5 in this.
Yes.
Where there's this linear thinking as opposed to sometimes you throw a big idea on the wall. I get the feeling that how they approach this is, let's throw the big idea out there and let's figure out how we can tell that story.
I'd actually be happy if DC would actually just take the graphic novel and read it and then just put it to film, because a lot of it is completely out of context of what actually has happened. They'll name a movie something and from a reader's standpoint, you're expecting this, and then you go into it and you're like, that's never happened. That has nothing to do with the comic.
Listen,
what are they doing?
I'm just glad that as my ADD moment's kicking in on the One Seat Buffer podcast, I'm just glad, fellas, that the ants from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids have gotten work again after
absolutely.
All.
Absolutely. That extra work is super important.
They're doing really good. And
I saw a few from Honey, I Blew Up the Kids,
yes.
too.
How Morpheus going to be afraid of giant ants?
Yeah.
Because poor Lawrence Fishburne gets surrounded by ants a couple of times.
I mean, he knows kung fu, so.
Can I confess?
I wanted him to kick an ant. Now, I'm not trying to say PETA come after me about kicking a CGI ant, but he's a grown 6'4" dude. If a big ant came in here right now, I would try and kick it. And
he's just an ant.
He's also a huge soccer fan, so he probably.
Yeah, that ant's face, dude. Pull it up and take it for a ride.
Can I confess?
Where was Rick Moranis? Go ahead.
Yeah, where's all?
I could not dislike the Matrix trilogy more than any other movie trilogy.
It's too bad.
Okay, Joel.
Because they're
okay, Joel's no longer allowed on the podcast.
You know, I'm just saying.
I think that I don't want to go into this because I think that there's a lot of positives that came out of the Matrix as far as
bullet time,
groundbreaking cinematography. Trying things. Keanu is Keanu. He's
ruining the name Anderson.
Anderson. Mr. Anderson. I tell you what, though. John Wick. So this is the same Keanu that's going to make three John Wicks.
Is now doing Bill and Ted 3.
And so he's got a lot of threes.
Okay, so there's a trilogy I could hate more than The Matrix, and that could be the Bill and Ted. No, actually, I like the first two.
I did, too. I want to come back to Ant-Man and the Wasp because I have an obnoxious connection for you.
Yes.
And this is a little trivia for the folks listening at home, and we'll let them fill in the blank if they can answer this. Walton Goggins and Michael Pena co-starred in a great television show that was on FX. Now, let's not answer, friends. Let's let the listener of the One Seat Buffer podcast fill in the blank.
Okay, I can't whistle that. We can't whistle it. We don't own that music. We don't want Merv Griffin.
Which TV show was it?
The Shield.
The Shield.
With
Corey
Michael
Dockle,
Chiklis.
With Michael Chiklis. The Shield, great show. How about Walton Goggins?
With a
big old toothy Walton Goggins playing a country boy in this movie that just wants to steal Hank Pym's power.
He is great.
And
you can
do so many good movies recently.
And you can do seven ways of separation with Marvel movies with The Shield too, because Michael Chiklis was a thing in Fantastic
Four.
That's
right. Yeah.
Oh, I forgot.
So it all comes full circle.
Walton Goggins, by the way, great teeth. Great
Absolutely.
Teeth. Look at those chompers on his Wikipedia page. I don't care if they're veneers or not. I'm not saying they are. But Walton Goggins, who plays the lovable Sonny Burke,
I wish he would have wore that hat in the movie, too.
And the other thing, and this is my nerddom coming out. So Star, the one person who is the father of the anti-hero in this movie, Ghost.
Right.
The bald guy. See him immediately. It's Michael Cerveris, who most people listening have no idea who that guy is. he's a multi-Tony Award-winning Broadway musical actor. He played Sweeney Todd in The Revive. I mean, I saw him. I'm like, this guy, I wish they would let him sing because he's one of the best singers that you'll ever hear in your entire life. But, hey, that just goes to show you, Broadway guys, they got to get paid. So they'll do small roles in these big Marvel movies.
Yeah, because he was on screen for like 20 seconds.
Yeah, but guys like me see him and they light up and it seriously made my night.
But Joel's right.
If he would have broke out into song, though, I don't think I would have liked the movie as much.
About, like, the ancillary characters, like the Judy Greer and the Bobby Cannavale.
I love Judy Greer.
They're fantastic. And they play Judy Greer is Ant-Man's kid, Cassie's mom, and Bobby Cannavale is like the lovable, for once, stepdad.
Yeah,
and
no
then
doubt.
There's
he's
this
great.
Moment,
he's a seat stealer in this thing.
He's so great, and he's pretty damn handsome, which is aggravating. But there's this one scene where they're like, they've got Hank Pym, and they've got the Wasp, and they're in like a holding room. room, and overweight FBI guy seats him there. Like, I can be the overweight FBI guy. Can you imagine that guy going to see the movie and being like, that was me. Did you see me in there?
But if we look him up, he's probably like in some, you know, David Mamet play on Broadway right now. Like, this guy's a legit Juilliard trained actor. I don't know that for a fact.
Wrong.
But that's these people, they find their way, and this is a break of a lifetime for them in a way get into a mainstream movie. And for the rest of their life, their kids like, what their friends are like, so what does your dad do? Oh, he's Sweeney Todd on Broadway. What? Oh, he's the guy who gets shot by the cannon in Ant-Man and the Wasp. Oh, that's your dad? That's
amazing.
My dad took
a giant Hello Kitty
Pez dispenser off of a motorcycle.
So the thing that's surprising about this room, and maybe I'm wrong, I feel like Corey might be the sleeper on this. So the ghost, Ava Starr, the actress is Hannah John Kamen. And because I'm not a viewer, I didn't know this. I just read it. But she's on Game of Thrones. Any Game of Thrones fans?
I have never
seen one episode. There's four of us in here, and we're 0-4.
I've seen it in hotels.
See it, and she'd be like, oh, that was Ornelli. I can't even say the name of these damn characters.
My wife and family just think that I am the worst person because I've never seen an episode of Game of Thrones.
Well, we talked about it.
There's just too much hype behind it, and I just don't care to see it because people have just ruined it for me.
Well, the first thing I said to Steve when the movie got over, I said, what was Evangeline Lilly in that she's famous for before this? Because I honestly didn't know, because I didn't watch Lost. I was not a Lost watcher. I wasted eight years of my life,
I told Jill, because for those of you that watched that show, that series finale just sucked so bad.
I don't want you to forget, though, real quick, Joel, Evangeline Lilly, you saw her in 2003. She was school student next to the locker in the classic Freddy versus Jason. Oh, how could we forget that? I saw it while I was in college at St. Ambrose. Classic movie. That's the real credit that she was given.
That's awesome.
Right. So she is the FBI agent. That's proof that you can be overweight FBI agent.
I think it's amazing that some of those big stars have those roles when they first start, where they are janitor number 3 in a slasher film and they die 10 seconds on screen.
Let me just give you Evangeline Lilly's filmography, keeping Lost in mind. So she goes from the Lizzie McGuire movie.
Yes.
Freddy versus Jason, Hang With Me. White Chicks. You're going to need a wheelchair. Then she goes The Hurt Locker. That's not an immediate jump, but she's right there. She was in Real Steel, which was kind of a turd burglar.
Okay.
And then two Hobbit movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's all of a sudden, crazy. The Lost credibility gets her to this plateau, which is The Hurt Locker, which is our
Academy. To go from what? Cheerleader number 3? What was it?
She was party guest in White Chicks in 2004. She did The Long Weekend in 2005 and Locker in 2008.
What was the White Chicks party guest? She's party guest in a movie like White Chicks.
Right.
How do you get lost after being a party guest?
Yeah, no doubt.
I'd have to see when Lost started. Let me look. Okay, so Lost starts in 2004.
So right after.
She takes the role as Kate. So they probably start shooting Lost in 2003. And she's like, hey, I got to go do this Wayans movie really quick. I'll be right back. Lost show that nobody's going to watch. J.J. Abrams. Okay.
But she didn't get paid.
And then immediately goes and gets Hurt Locker after that.
Crazy.
Which brings it all back to Marvel because Jeremy Renner, Hurt Locker, he's in the Marvel universe.
We can do it all day with Marvel movies.
But Marvel has done an excellent job of finding these legit characters who they've all worked together. I truly believe that that's why these movies have worked so well, because these people aren't strangers to each other. They've worked with each other in other aspects. I guarantee you, just for being on small sets and productions, you know, as a horrible actor myself, is you have people like Walter Coggins and Michael Pena. They're probably telling stories of shenanigans that happened on The Shield, you know, stuff like that. And that livens up a set, that lightens everything, it gets everybody together a little bit more. And I think the creative process just gets a lot better. I feel like you can tell when you're watching a movie when people like each other. Mm-hmm. I honestly kind of feel like with some of the movies, and Marvel's susceptible to this, because I felt like this way with the second Thor movie, that these people didn't like working together. That it was uncomfortable.
The only good thing that came out of Thor 2 is the Reality Stone. I mean, that's where the quantum realm. So that's it. Like, Thor 2 Dark World is a bad movie. Like, that's proof that Marvel's not perfect.
Yeah, it's definitely the...
not good.
It's definitely the smudge on their record, I
feel like. I bet that they're almost like just... Yeah. We got to mention that that's where the Reality Stone was.
Yeah, by the way.
Boy, let's forget talking about that one, remember?
We cannot get Guardians out fast enough. Like, we need to get this movie out so
that
quickly.
Was not good. So, I'm going to tell you this. Ant-Man and the Wasp is so enjoyable. You should see it in the theaters.
Yes.
We're sitting here in the Palms 10 Movie Theater in Muscatine, Iowa, which is in the great state of Iowa. And you should go see this in your local movie theater because it's so fun. And, fellas, we saw it in 2D. I bet it looks great in 3D.
That quantum tunnel scene, I was sitting thinking, man.
I bet it was pretty trippy.
Yeah, it was probably pretty
3D.
BA.
Well, and a lot of the effects with the Pez dispenser being thrown and the things, you know, being oversized and then shrunk, I bet that 3D, it probably looks really cool.
It's like they got the training wheels off the bike on this one.
Yeah.
And they were just having fun. And that's what's so great about it. Like, they were playing up to the gimmicks, and I was sitting there just enjoying every minute of it because that's how I came into it. I came into this. It's summer. This is a fun movie. I'm not going to sit here and nitpick it for, like, where can I get an Academy Award nominated performance from, because that's not what this is, and it's not meant to be.
And I think Marvel knows that, too. I don't even think they go for that. I think they just go for what they know, and that's how to entertain an audience and how to tell a good story, and that's all they care about.
The unsung hero of this movie, though, for me, the person who every time they appeared on screen, I was smiling, laughing, and I was thrilled that they were there.
Let's say it at the same time, the actor's name.
Randall.
One, two, three. Overweight FBI guy.
Randall Park.
Randall Park.
FBI agent.
Jimmy Woo.
Yes.
He's great.
He is. So, I mean, he's probably first burst on the scene for most of us when we saw the interview with Seth Rogen and James Franco playing Kim Jong-un in that movie. Randall Park. He's on, he's got ABC sitcom right after
he's
Black-ish.
He's done so much. I mean,
yeah, he's in the house. He's all over the place. He is so funny. He's your great character actor. He's kind of like a Ken Jeong. I'm not trying to just pigeonhole
Asian.
Oh,
he was in Office Christmas Party as which is a sleeper.
He's just really, really
Lego
funny.
Lego Ninjago,
which is now on HBO, I think, if you haven't seen it.
Randall Park is your sleeper, huh?
Randall Park's
my sleeper. That's a good choice. His character's great, and he and Paul Rudd, FBI agent Wu and Scott Lang have some incredibly
they play off each other very well
scenes. There's a scene at the end that they just let breathe or ruminate, however you want to describe it, and it was almost uncomfortable, but the payoff was so funny. So
I wonder how much that was improv.
Going to get dinner?
Yeah, they do play
awesome.
Off each other very well, and like you said, it could very well just be improv, because looking at those two, I mean, it looks like those two could just sit down and do that without a script and do that.
This is the kind of movie
without any coaching.
I want to get the DVD because I want to get the deleted scenes from this movie. Do they still do that on DVDs?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Do they do gag reels still?
You can get them on YouTube probably
sooner
than later. But it's
sure.
Like
DVD. You don't have a Blu-ray player?
Right.
I watch all my... Do they still make Betamax?
Because
I watch all mine on Betamax.
The same movies, though. Do I have to have Back to the Future 1, 2, and 3 on VHS, DVD,
you don't?
DVD anniversary,
you don't?
Blu-ray anniversary?
Yes.
I don't want to buy it digitally.
Picture disc?
I'm not going to buy it on 4K. I'm all in. But yes, Ant-Man and the Wasp, it's PG-13. It's not too long. It's definitely packed to the gills with fun. And that lady who plays the ghost again, I don't want to get her name wrong. Let me pull it up. Because I do want to mention, as far as in my real pick for my underdog in the movie, it's Hannah John Kamen, who is your antagonist, Ava Starr / the ghost. That was a super cool character.
Yeah.
They introduced her in a weird way. You didn't know if it was a guy or a gal. And
that character in comics isn't really a common character. Isn't like, you know, the one of the forefront characters. They introduced that character, and it was a male character that is played very well by a female.
Interesting.
and was introduced back in the 80s, and then kind of just there was nothing with that character for a long time until early 2000s when they had a couple storylines that it was involved
and
in.
Cool. And you wonder if that they needed this medium. They needed the modern digital film medium
to be able to showcase
that character to life. Because honestly, that's a tough character to communicate in comic book form unless it's a flip book. Like, I'm just saying, like the motion of that character is what makes it intriguing. The phasing in and out, the molecular imbalance or instability. And that, I think that's why it lends so well to a movie versus an actual comic book.
And without spoiling too much, Ghost has this condition after a freak accident where she can't stop like molecularly deconstructing
herself.
Just
keeps bringing down. Yeah.
She's flipping around through realms. She's trying to get a hold of Janet Pym, who's quantum realm, who she thinks can potentially help her. And that's kind of where a couple other people come into the fold, like the Lawrence Fishburne character.
He's great in this movie.
So he goes from the Matrix to the quantum.
Oh my!
Yeah. And fresh off the boat, that's the Randall Park.
Boy.
Sorry, but Lawrence Fishburne's in Blackish, which is right before it on ABC.
I forgot about Fresh Off the Boat. Michael Douglas and Lawrence Fishburne, you feel like those two characters have history, and there's some tension between them.
Yeah.
And it's believable because they're such good damn actors. That's why it's believable. These are professionals. So when they get a script, they don't just look at it and go, okay, I got to show up and act like I have history with this guy. They're probably shooting the breeze, you know, before the movie even goes to be filmed. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, these are people that are showing up ready. They're prepared. Everybody is professional. Certainly, they're having fun. But if you can't come to the set ready to deliver your lines but not be opposed to doing it, like, three or four more times, injecting some of that improv, that's what I think makes these movies so good.
It's not looked down upon, I think, by these actors anymore to be in a blockbuster or a big action, you know, comic book movie. The writers have done a good job of making it compelling enough that these people feel like it's worth their time.
Sure.
And it's no longer a situation where these major actors like a Lawrence Fishburne, who since he was 19 years old has been in some of the most important movies, you know, ever made. I mean, the guy was 19 on a boat in the middle of Cambodia filming Apocalypse Now.
Right.
I mean, this guy's first movie is Apocalypse Now. I'd be thrilled to do Ant-Man so that I could just relax.
Yeah, and I don't think that house payment.
Yeah.
Make that fourth house payment from the Ant-Man money. And I'm not saying that these movies are, you know, I listened to a podcast with Paul Rudd and it was great, but he was kind of like, he was kind of brushing off the Ant-Man thing. And I get that, you know, he's a very family-oriented person, and he certainly has not let the stardom get to him, which is great. But at the end of the day, it doesn't hurt to, you know, have a couple million dollars for 3 months of work. I mean, we're all sitting here thinking, like, I'd go to work. Family, I'll see you in a little bit. Gonna go make a couple mil. Be right back.
Come a long way from Phoebe's boyfriend on Friends.
Yeah, no doubt. And to touch on what you were saying, I don't think 20 years ago that like what you're saying, these mainstream stars that are, some of them are Academy Award winners and Oscar winners, and there's no way that stars 20 years ago would have done this.
Think about Jack Nicholson in Batman.
Right.
Yeah. It was just
crazy.
Yeah, it was just a weird pick back then.
I mean, he was looked at as
Michael Keaton was Mr. Mom. There's no way that they thought he would be in that.
And I've mentioned this before, Jack Nicholson, really briefly, here's why Jack Nicholson was a genius taking the role as the Joker in 88 or 87, whenever he accepted.
89.
It came out in 89, but you have to assume Burton was whispering in his ear. The man took a percentage deal. So Jack Nicholson made it's like $50 million off of Batman.
Oh, yeah.
So that guy is a genius. It wasn't a business decision per se.
It was,
I'll do the movie, but give me a piece of the back end. And when a Jack Nicholson says that, just like Donald Sutherland said that to get Animal House made, and they show that clip in Ant-Man.
Yep.
That's the only reason the Animal House got made, because Donald Sutherland said, I'll do it. So that's what I'm saying. Like, these people, they know what they're doing. But back in the day.
But I can't see them walking up to
Tom Hanks?
I was just going to say Tom Hanks. To go up to a guy that's doing Philadelphia in the 90s, you know, a serious dramatic role. I don't see them saying
to come out as a villain and like. Black
yeah,
Panther
I don't
Creed,
see them no. coming out saying, "Hey, would you like to play Iron Man?" and having him say, "Well, yeah, sign me up." I just don't see it.
Well, just today or yesterday at this point, Idris Elba, who's a phenomenal actor,
that's
just
fantastic.
Signed on to play the villain in the upcoming Hobbs and whatever Fast and Furious spinoff that The Rock and Tyrese are doing. So we're living in an age where people are taking roles because they want to work. Who wouldn't want to work?
They just
want to
work. Yeah.
If The Rock says, "Hey, Tony," and I'd be like, "Hey, Dwayne, we remember
Skyscraper 2, we're making it."
Yeah, or you want to come be like chubby extra?
You could be chubby
too.
FBI guy.
Yeah, I'm in. I've been training my whole life, Dwayne. Call me up, dog. I'll wear Under Armour shirts
to fly a helicopter, fly us into the jungle,
yes.
and get shot down by a pterodactyl.
I'm in.
I am in. I could be Jack Black's stand-in.
Right? You're a lot taller than
double.
Jack Black.
Yeah, Jack Black.
It's like 5'6".
And I will admit, here you go. Here's a one seat buffer podcast confession. I did not see Jumanji in theaters. I did rent it, and I didn't hate it.
I laughed so hard.
I have to say, I was my son wanted me to go to it, and I was kind of reluctant to want to go see it. But when I got there and was watching it, I found myself
another confession.
Very amused.
I haven't seen it.
Oh snap! You got to see it. You'll enjoy it.
Another confession. If we're doing Rock confessions, last night, just on July 3rd or July 4th evening, I viewed Baywatch. For the second time.
And did you smell what The Rock was cooking?
It's so funny. Like it's not, it shouldn't be as funny as it is.
I agree with you. I did see Baywatch. I haven't seen Chips. I feel like the R-rated comedy can swing both ways in a hurry. Tag is still in theaters now. I've heard good things about that. I did not love Baywatch, but I also am the guy that thought like Neighbors, is that what it was called with Seth Rogen and whatever handsome McFaces?
You mean
face.
But Rose Byrne.
Ab face.
Rose Byrne.
Rose Byrne is
Bobby Cannavale's wife.
That's right. Wow, talented. So yeah, I think the R-rated comedies are out there for sure.
And what is that? I can't remember his name.
Who? The good thing?
Fanatis. Yeah. Zac Efron.
I figured if I got a Zach name, Zach. Oh boy.
Preppy.
But yeah, listen, Ant-Man and the Wasp is PG-13 summer blockbuster. This is the summer blockbuster of the summer 2018. Is this the movie of the summer?
I don't think so. I think it's a good family fun movie.
No, it can't be Jurassic World. That movie sucked. No. I'm coming off the wagon on it even more. It was a piece of garbage. It really was. What do we use to define it
as a blockbuster? Like, we love it?
Well,
or
you
it
could
made...
look at it in two ways. You could look at it by the numbers. And
by sales, yeah.
Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom will crush everything.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it'll do way better than Ant-Man.
I think we're
still
being premature on it. I think the best movie of the summer, whether it's we like it and numbers, I think it's going to be Mission Impossible.
I can't wait to see it.
I'm actually pretty stoked to see it. I absolutely hate Tom Cruise as a person and an actor, but
hate's a strong word.
It's hate.
Rogue Nation.
It's seething hate for Tom Cruise.
Rogue Nation was so.
But
I like that.
The Mission
movie.
Impossible movies
good?
Are
that
fun.
Awesome.
They're enjoyable.
It's Simon Pegg. I think he's the one that's made the last two. I mean, Shaun of the Dead.
You're giving it to Simon Pegg? Shaun of the Dead is great. I'm not going to undersell that. But
Hot Fuzz.
I mean, I just
I'm also intrigued to see.
The first Mission Impossible movie came out when I was in 7th grade.
Was it 95 or 96?
I think I was like a freshman in high school. But
they're still making them.
I'm also really intrigued on the tensile strength of carbon fiber prosthesis in Skyscraper with Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
So
that comes out soon,
I'm watching
too,
the trailer.
It?
I'm watching the trailer for Skyscraper, watching Solo, sitting next to my father, who is a 41-year physical therapist and has been to Haiti to outfit amputees with prosthetic limbs. I look at him and I go, I just smile and he goes, "Nope, couldn't do it. Can't, that's not possible." Like it's just like it's just yeah, it's almost lost me on the trailer.
That was like my grandpa watching war movies. He was a Navy SEAL frogman in the Special Forces. So watching war movies, he'd be like, "Nope, never happening." He watched Rambo pick up a 50 caliber gun and shoot it with one hand.
Oh my God.
And he was like, "Yeah."
He'd fall over.
He's like, "No."
Well, I'm just going to run through some summer 2018 movies and just say yay or nay real quick as we get ready to get closer to wrapping up the One Seat Buffer podcast. Deadpool 2.
Yay.
Yay.
Solo, A Star Wars Story.
I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't see it, to be a full disclosure. Ocean's 8.
Haven't seen it. Heard good things about it, though.
We're so sexist.
I wanted to see it.
Wait, hold on. Here's how you know we're sexist. Ready? Ocean's 8. Nay.
Nay.
I want to see it.
Incredibles 2.
Yes.
I haven't seen it yet.
Corey, you're the saving grace. I would say yay.
Yeah,
I'm disappointed.
Absolutely.
One of us
actually
has seen Ocean's 8. Come on, gentlemen. Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
I backed off that one. I didn't
say
see
pass.
It.
And then I got to go. I got to.
Okay,
another.
So what are we saying? Go see it? Do see
We're
it?
Just
well,
saying,
what's the yay or nay?
Could they be the movie of the summer?
Oh.
I haven't seen Sicario Day of the Soldado, but I heard it's incredible. I
actually, now that you bring up Incredibles 2, I think that might
Incredibles
be.
Incredibles 2
that,
could
that
be
might
the movie
have
of the
a.
Let
that,
me just touch on a couple more quick hitters. Ant-Man and the Wasp, we just saw it. Absolutely, I'm going in.
Yeah, it's really good.
I will 100% take my kids to see Hotel Transylvania.
Absolutely.
3.
I haven't seen any of the Hotel Transylvania.
Slappy Pappy Gooby Dooby. Remember when Adam Sandler?
I'll probably go.
He makes fun of himself in the trailer. I'm in. I'm in. Also in that same week is Skyscraper.
No.
I'll see it, though.
No.
The sleeper could be Equalizer 2 with Denzel Washington. Where he just kills a bunch of people.
Yeah,
in the
trailer. He's kind
of
like
crap.
I might go see that one.
That looks awesome.
I like Denzel in that kind of movie.
Joel is all in for Mamma Mia. Here we go again.
No,
Friday, July
20th. No, I will boycott. I'm telling people, do not see that movie.
So can we? When does that
movie
come out?
Not support jukebox musicals.
When does that movie come out?
That is Friday, July 20th.
So let's reconvene on July 21st and see if Joel's seen it.
If you guys see, I haven't even seen the first one.
Couple other quickies: Mission Impossible Fallout.
Yes.
Teen Titans Go. The movie.
Absolutely. Oh my God!
I don't,
please.
I'm a no on that.
Just the fact that Nicolas Cage finally gets to play Superman.
Right.
I am absolutely in 100%.
I'm out on that
and,
one.
And perhaps the last two that I'll mention: summer 2018 movies. Here comes the sentimental heartstrings. That is Christopher Robin.
Oh, I'll go see that. I'm gonna go see that.
No, I.
It looks kind of intense. I liked Winnie the Pooh growing up.
Yeah.
Did anybody else watch the Winnie the Pooh cartoon?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think it always bothered me.
And Brad, what's his name, is voicing Eeyore.
Thanks.
Yeah, Brad Garrett.
Brad Garrett is Eeyore.
Thanks for noticing.
That's great casting.
So I think I have this like weird love and hate for Winnie the Pooh. My grandmother loved Winnie the Pooh. She was an English teacher. Like, there was, you know, seminal literary texts in our household. It was Winnie the Pooh and Dr. Seuss. So I have this amazing nostalgia for Winnie the Pooh, but I have a tremendous hatred for the cartoon voice of Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, come on.
Like, the voice
classic.
That was in my head of when it was, like, read to me as a kid, that wasn't
grandma.
The voice. It's my grandma.
Yeah.
And so this weird voice I've never liked, I've always had a problem with it.
Robin.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I think it looks cool.
It does. It looks amazing.
And for your consideration,
The Meg. Yes.
Which is not a movie based on Meg Griffin from Family Guy.
Or Meg Ryan.
It is The Meg starring Jason Statham. And this is
The Megalodon.
I don't want to spoil it, fellas. I don't want to spoil it, but the tagline is "Pleased to eat you."
Oh yeah, Jason Statham and a tagline like that—that is like, this is
my wife will definitely see that.
Please,
just to see Jason Statham's abs.
Please tell me LL Cool J is on the soundtrack.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Deepest bluest, my hat is like a shark's fin. Is he reprising that from Deep Blue Sea, which is the worst and greatest music lyric ever?
Has everybody here seen Deep Blue Sea?
Yes.
Corey, you remember that one?
Oh yeah.
Oh, they should rescreen that again.
It's fantastic.
Just for nostalgia.
But the thing is like, that movie has like the running theme that even Ant-Man and the Wasp has. It's, hey, we've got something wrong with a family member. We're going to create some sort of scientific technology to bring them back.
Right.
And we're potentially opening up. It goes all the way back to Jekyll and Hyde. I mean, this is the same story from that, you know, 1800s novel. I mean, this is a tale as old as time.
Oh, my God. A Beauty and the Beast quote.
Song.
Okay, Angela Lansbury.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, though.
Jerry Orbach is the Lumiere.
No matter how recycled the formula, Ant-Man and the Wasp gets it right. And they get a lot of it right. And I'm not going to be the person that will look for the YouTube series Everything Wrong. I just saw it pop up today on my phone. Everything Wrong with a Black Panther. It was 17 minutes long. I'm not watching that. I love the Black Panther. I didn't think there was anything wrong with it. They're going to have something like that for Ant-Man and the Wasp. Well, in this scene, you can see a grip's tip of a microphone. I mean, that's
not worth it.
As long as it was just the tip, it doesn't matter. So it's fine. Listen, go see Ant-Man.
There's no dog water. We're good.
Go see Ant-Man and the Wasp and have yourself a good time. We wrap up with this.
The Raiders rating system.
Actually, before you wrap up, can I do a shameless, since we're talking about Marvel movies, can I do a shameless Marvel plug?
Yes.
Luke Cage Season 2 came out last weekend.
Okay.
And it's amazing, and I'm not saying that just because my brother is in the series.
Yes.
But Johnny Alexander plays, like you said, he kind of plays the role of what you want to be. He was, I think he's Dirty Cop number 2.
Yeah, that's amazing. There's an incredible sequence.
But he was in the first series. Now he reprises his role as Dirty Cop in this
one. Can we get him as a guest on the podcast?
I could probably do it. We could do a Skype or call in. Yeah.
He has done a lot
but
of
yeah,
great
he's in that and
motion capture for stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he's got I won't go through it all. He's done a ton, but you can look him up on IMDb and see all of his credentials, but yeah, he's done a ton of movies.
Does he have a cardboard cutout guy, cuz we want to get a cardboard cutout.
I'm actually going to ask him if he can send me one. But yeah, check out Luke Cage Season 2. It's
I got to check out Season 1.
It's actually it's far
both seasons.
It's good. So good. Luke Cage by far is
which was the show?
Defenders?
No, before that he was on
Jessica Jones.
Thank you.
Jessica,
yes. He was great on Jessica.
Which season 2 of Jessica Jones is amazing too.
Well, I think it's important to talk about movies like that in these Netflix series.
You haven't seen any of them?
Because we're supporting writers. Like, you know this. Like, your brother's in the industry. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got friends who are in the industry. They're struggling in the writer's room somewhere. You know, going and watching, you know, some bad B Netflix movie, we should be thankful that we have those movies now. Because, like, we joke about Staten Island is kind of this guilty pleasure movie that I like on Netflix. I finally got Tony to watch it. It's like Bobby Moynihan and Colin Jost. It's a lot of Saturday Night Live cast. Yes. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those movies that that movie was good. Like, it's actually a good movie. It's not great. It shouldn't have made millions of dollars. That's why it didn't. But it's a good movie. There's lots of good nuggets and great TV out there that these Netflix and Hulus and Amazon Prime has created an audience for that you used to only have to get a big HBO deal or Showtime deal to get those things made.
True story.
And so go out, watch those shows, give things a chance, even if you've never heard of it before, because you might find something that you get to be the smartest person at the party now. Because hey, have you seen this?
I tell you what, there's so much content. You'd have to go into the quantum realm to watch and come back,
circle,
and go. And
we're back.
That series finale of Golden Girls was really tough
because of the quantum.
I have a funny Golden Girls story, but it's not for this podcast.
Well, let's wrap it up. One Seat Buffer podcast.
I would sit shoulder to shoulder with anybody to see this.
The rating system is, Corey Doffa, would you break the one? And by the way, for this movie, we each had a one seat buffer.
We did.
When you go to
we
see
kept
movie,
true to the title.
You have a seat open between you and your friends. I did it with my wife once. She was not happy. she broke the book. Tried to tell her you could put in the middle seat. So Corey Doffa, since you're our first time guest, would you break the one seat buffer? Would you sit next to either a significant other or a stranger to watch Ant-Man and the Wasp?
I would.
I agree. 100%.
Absolutely.
And I don't even like strangers that much.
No, I don't like people in general.
So. But
we don't even like each other always.
I was going to say, you know, and we were almost close to having to break the buffer because
that's
there were a lot of people.
There was a lot of people on the show.
9 o'clock is the perfect time for a movie. Like,
if Travis Gatel, the general manager of the Palms 10 movie theaters and Fridley theaters, if they could just have all these premieres at 9. It would be wonderful. 9 o'clock is perfect.
When we were getting in here, though, the 6:30 was packed too. Lots of folks we saw were coming out. I mean, it's been a busy week with the 4th of July being so hot, and a lot of people took in movies here. Like we said, you said it earlier. Support your local theater because it's so important that we have these good facilities to really. This is our hobby, and it's been our hobby since a lot of us were little kids.
Oh yeah.
Up next, Captain Marvel, and then in Avengers 4, whatever it's going to be called. But right now, it's all about Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Go see it
if you're not a Marvel fanatic.
And
go laugh, because you'll laugh. Even if, like we all said, this is your first time seeing Ant-Man, you will leave having
you will enjoy for 2 hours.
Yes.
And if you just another quick plug before we wrap it up, if you are subscribing to our podcast, which we thank you for that, subscribe, review, you know, put it in your downloads.
Like also, the Facebook page.
Like our Facebook page. And we're going to start doing – we can't do a podcast on every movie that comes out, but a lot of us, we get to go see movies with our spouses or our kids. We're going to start writing up a little bit brief reviews and kind of our take on movies. And those are going to be on our website. And you can find our website linked at our Facebook page as well as – in the descriptions of these podcasts.
Joel will take all the musicals.
There's some good ones coming out, guys.
Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, not me.
All right. Well, for
you
our...
You like musicals. Steve's a classically trained pianist, for goodness sake.
Now you just ruined my cred.
On behalf of our executive producer, Antonio Banderas, this is Tony Tone.
Steve Truitt.
Joel Krausant? No, it doesn't work.
No. Steve Truant?
Corey?
Corey Dolfo.
All right, we'll see you next time on the One Seat Buffer podcast, and we'll be looking for Ulysses S. Grant.
Grant?
You're going to get these jokes once you see it.
See it. Bye.